Welcome to the High Performance HVAC Podcast. We talk about testing, not guessing, and also we challenge the status quo of the HVAC industry. I'm your host, David Richardson, and with me is Jim Ball. For those of you that are familiar to NCI and you've been to NCI training classes before, Jim may be a very familiar face. He may have actually trained you. Jim, welcome.
Hey, David. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you for being with us. Before we start, you want to let everybody know a little bit about your background and how you ended up in HVAC and where you're, how you ended up in your current position now.
Yeah, you know how it goes. Like most people in this industry, I didn't have a choice. Dad started a business in 1964. And when I was 11, 12, I started riding with a service tech running tools. And when I got in high school, it was mid 80s, we had been pretty good size and had to slow down in the late 70s and mid 80s. And I was the install crew for summers and nights during school. So, I grew up in the business, went to, Mississippi State and got a degree in engineering, mechanical, just kind of expected to go to work with Dad. And he said, just nothing here for you. And that would have been 1990. He said, I've struggled all my life and I don't want that for you. And I went ahead and went to work for Texaco Chemical, and Dad, in that time frame between 90 and 95, he met Ron Smith, and Ron made a statement one day in one of the classes Dad was in that said, back in the 70s, I used to go to the mailbox on July 1st to get $1 million out from my maintenance program. And that struck a chord with Dad. Hey, maybe there's something here.
Right.
And he changed the business and went, pretty much maintenance and service direct. And, while he had tried to do maintenance before, Ron helped him organize it. Ron actually, was a coach for us for several years.
Right.
And changed the business. And I came back in 95 and we had a great run. Dad and I loved working with Dad. Dad was, very open and free with me. Just let me do whatever I wanted to do. Let me run the place. And he made sure we didn't get into trouble money wise. And he just kind of let me go for it. And I tried all kind of stuff, we just had a different idea about service. And that's, this article that came out, and I got to confess a little bit, ChatGPT helps me write my articles, but, the ideas are there and like we were talking, David, there's just, a lack of respect for people from companies these days. I feel like true service, people who really want to take care of folks, has just gone away. And, it's a shame, and maybe some of this article can help, point folks in the right direction. But.
And that article, I think, is important. Let's take a step back for a second, because this actually started as part of a conversation that we had in Biloxi, Mississippi, when Dominic and I were down for a carbon monoxide conference. We had dinner with you and your wife, and you had just put this article out in Today's AC, which is a publication that Jeff Schlickenmeyer runs out of Central Florida. And the title of that article was Profit from Service. And one of the things that always stuck out for me before you came to NCI a couple of years ago and then have moved on to your current position now was when you were a contractor, we always had you in for the service side, maintenance agreements, and how to make that profitable based on integrity and doing it the right way. And when you sent this article to me and Mike Wild to take a look at, my first impression of it was, this is a masterclass in how to run a service department the right way. You care to, and I know you said ChatGPT, but it's you are all through it. It's obvious you're using it for an organizational tool.
Right. And to, proofread for me, because I'm not the best with English by any means. But, I think what most people believe is that they have service just to take care of the warranty period. And most folks who have a service organization don't realize just how much money it costs them to have a service. They're not making profit. And you know, in our mixed groups and things, you know, we were involved in an ACA mixed group, and a guy would say, man, I do really well in my service. And we would start, you know, comparing and looking, and come to find out he's paying customers to go see him to take care of their system, which is a shame. You know, unfortunately, there's this thing called money that you got to make, you know, otherwise you, why even be in it if you're not going to make some money? So a service organization has just had a lot of moving parts, and it takes a lot of effort to be good at it. And, you know, a lot of overhead, a lot of weight that goes with, you know, with being in the service business.
Yeah. And one of the first, I think the first point you made in the article was that most residential HVAC service companies lose money in their service department.
And they don't even realize it, you know?
Yeah. That was one of the coolest things that always impressed me with you, Jim, is you took test, you know, if you don't test, you're just guessing. You always took that to not just the HVAC system side on performance. You were measuring the performance of your business. And that's how you knew your numbers. So do you care to expand on that a little bit? How you did that and what some of those numbers were? I mean, you broke it down, you knew truck by truck, tech by tech, what had to be there. And one of the things that always impressed me with the way that you ran Ball was, instead of trying to figure out how to run the most calls and sell the most parts, you were given more value in doing less calls and making more money, which is totally counterintuitive to what a lot of our industry is teaching now.
Yeah. You know, you don't make money when you're driving down the road. It's hard for a guy to bill out when he's sitting at a stoplight, you know? So, and you know, we kind of abuse our techs, honestly. And I know this summer's been really hot in South Mississippi, and, you know, we might, in the old days, we might've run a tech on 10 calls. But once we figured out, you know, we really got to stop and take our time and take care of customers and find the root problem, not just fix the symptom. You know, it just kind of changed the way we approached service altogether. I remember Ron Smith giving us a technician evaluation sheet. You know, you need to know how many calls he ran per day, how many maintenance agreements he sold off those calls. And, you know, how many offerings of accessories did he give? All of that, which started me thinking. And then when I got involved with NCI, the measure, don't guess, it just all kind of came together. And that was, largely from NCI's influence and their coaching that helped me go from just not just performance of HVAC systems, but to the performance of my air conditioning company.
Right.
And we were, you know, we were collecting data on everything. I knew how long it took a tech to get to his call on average. You know, I knew how much he was going to bill on average. I knew, really how much labor it took inside the office to get him to that call, how much time it took to get him to the call and then to follow up with that, with that appointment, and really just trying to take care of people. You know, if you call your cable company and ask them to come out and service your house, they'll tell you, well, we'll be there tomorrow afternoon. If you call AT&T, they'll say, we'll have it fixed by the end of the year. Not quite that bad, but maybe by the end of the week, you know?
Yeah.
How can a customer accept that? How can a person stay home from work all day tomorrow to wait on a service company that shows up at 6 o'clock tomorrow night? He could have gone to work, you know, made a living.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just the service side of our, people just don't understand that service could be so much better than what it is. You know, all it takes is a phone call to that customer while they're at work. Yeah. Hey, my tech's finishing up on a call ahead of you. He'll be there in 30 minutes. Most people live within 30 minutes of their
right.
work, you know, so I could leave work and be home and not miss a whole day's worth of pay.
Right.
So, I mean, there's all kind of, you know, things that you had to back up and think about. And once you know those key performance indicators, like I knew my average time between calls was about 30 minutes. If I know that, then I know my customer, hey, I can call him when he's finishing up ahead of you and make sure they're home for the next call. Just those little metrics that you don't know unless you're measuring, unless you're paying attention.
Right. Now, one of the things that you did too with those metrics is it wasn't just you that knew those metrics. You put those out to where everybody could see the metrics that applied to them. You had scoreboards at where everybody could see them. So they knew if they were hitting those key performance indicators.
Yeah. And what
that's huge.
John Garofalo said, you ever been to a T-ball game? Walk up and ask what the score is. Nobody knows. It don't matter. You know, they're just out there having fun. Well, unfortunately, you've got to know in business. You've got to know the score. And so unless you put the score up for everybody to see, they don't know it. And it motivates, you know, your high performers. If you put their scores up, it motivates the rest of them.
Yeah.
And you put everybody's score up and there's no hiding anything. You know, for us, even our, you know, our balance sheet, a profit and loss, we shared everything, routinely, you know, every quarter or so, Dad would come in and give us a, how things were going, but also, you know, made a way for, anybody to make a good living, you know, that came to work with us. And that was because we knew the metrics. You know, we knew those KPIs. When I went and considered selling the business, I went to see the guy that was looking at purchasing us. And his business, he had metrics. And he had, you know, and he was much bigger than I was, you know, and he was making good money, but he had, you know, 20% of my call should be labor, cost. So, I mean, he knew his metrics too, and that's what made me feel comfortable selling my family.
Right.
To him, you know,
I know some of the metrics, it's hard to put a number on them that you guys did because you focused on the service side of it. And that's one of the things that we'd had a previous conversation about is that how people have grown so accustomed to poor service, it's almost like they accept it. But how you were looking for, with always your customers having relationships, and those have extended even after selling the company, you still have your customers that run into you and call you. To me, that's a sign of not necessarily a number that you could put to it, but that you were succeeding in creating those relationships and providing good customer service.
Well, and you know, we loved taking care of people, and that meant that we loved people, you know? And so, you know, when I looked to hire folks, I looked to hire people that wanted to be, to create relationships, wanted to learn about people, wanted to tell a joke while they were still standing in the house, you right. know, all of those things that you, just can't put a number, you know, I can't tell you what benefit that is, but I can tell you it's a benefit, you know, but, maybe that's the one thing I couldn't measure. But if your techs are truly dedicated to taking care of people, then they'll learn the technical side. They'll learn that stuff, but I couldn't teach, you know, I every now and then I'd hire a guy that I couldn't teach him to care, you know? Dad yeah. used to say, if you got to turn somebody's cooing off, in the middle of June, you go, and they're going to be without cooling overnight. You go home, you sleep with the air off. Just see, you know, if you need a lesson in empathy, that's the way you get it. You be hot with them at the same time.
Wow.
And so we didn't, you know, we didn't like to leave anybody without cooling. We carried window units around with us in case we couldn't find a part, you know, we'd
right.
put a window unit in for them. So at least they can sleep in their bedroom with cooling, you know, but, those little, it's all in the details and y'all know this, but I remember going to a conference in 91, 92. It was the first conference I went with Texaco. Went to Dallas to a hotel there in Dallas. I'm not going to call it out, but I, you know, small town guy, I'd never really been in a big city much. I had, but this place, this was back when they had ashtrays in the lobbies.
Okay.
And you'd see somebody come by with a cigarette and they'd stand there and smoke a minute and then they'd put that cigarette in that ashtray. And within 30 seconds, maybe a minute, somebody'd come along and clean that sand out of that ashtray and stamping the logo of the hotel back on that sand. And that don't sound like much, but what kind of impression does that give to the customer?
Yeah.
You know, oh, it's a clean place. I didn't doubt that my pillowcase was clean. You know, I didn't doubt that that the room had been well taken care of because they took such good care of the ashtray. You know, it's like driving up in a customer's driveway with your van and you got all kind of junk up on the dash. I mean, what impression does that give your customer? Or you walk into the home and just throw your tools on their carpet instead of, you know, laying out a drop cloth. Those details that seem like it's nothing. I don't know that our society anymore cares about that. But when you do it, then they start to care. Then they start to realize the difference. And money's not as big an object. You know, for them, when you're taking care of them, they don't mind spending money on taking care of their home when they know you're doing it with pure intentions. You know, you're there with pure intentions, take care of their system, make sure they're taken care of. They can trust that because of the way you treat their home, the way you treat yourself, the way you treat your vehicle. All of that speaks to, are we good at service or not? And, yeah. And the flip side of that is it does take time, which time means money. It costs. But I promise, I was 3 and 4 times everybody else's price. But because we took the time and took care of customers, it didn't matter. You know, they would gladly pay that. And, I did things as inexpensively as I could, but in the same respect, I was there to take care of you. And I don't want to go and lay my head down at night and think, man, I shouldn't have done that. Or I should have offered them this, or I was in too big a hurry to get home, you know,
right.
All of those things that kind of cheapen who you are. You've got to take your time and just take care of people. And that's why we went to, you know, I went to try to get my guys 4, maybe 5 calls, service calls a day. And wanted them to take the performance metrics and offer repairs that improve the performance, not just fix the system. And, you know, if you go to a house, if my salesperson, my changeout guy went to a home and he was looking at a system that was 10 years old and it had a dead compressor, or it was time to change it out. If we change that equipment out, and don't make any other changes, just change the equipment, that piece is going to last 10 years, maybe. Yeah. And now the way each time we try to improve equipment by improving the SEER rating, we're actually making it last less. I mean, it's not right. going to last as long. It's not built as strong or with the tolerances that it was in the past. But now that equipment might last 5 years. And here we know we got to have a bigger return. We know we got to have more duct work. We know that, and we don't offer that in with our changeout. We've not done customer. We've not been fair to the customer.
And that's something that you always drilled down. That's why I always love listening to you teach, is because you always drilled the caring part. And that's not something that just changes overnight. Caring is, you're really in it for the long game, and you may not see the immediate results, but when you do, it's like it clicks. And I know you were like me when you started doing this. One of the things that drew us to NCI was you weren't selling silver bullets and trinkets. You were actually selling what the customer needed to improve their quality of life and their comfort based on measurements. You could point back to it and prove it to make yourself different. And I think, to your point, the caring is a large part of that as well.
Yeah. And you know, shift gears a minute. Let's talk about maintenance. I see, and unfortunately, people believe this, but the old loss leader, we'll charge you $89 for a tune-up or $69 for a tune-up. Back in the old days, it was $44.44. I used to do tune-ups for $44.44. That was dad's special. What can you do for that? I mean, that's what the cost is to get to the house. I mean, that to me tells me you're without pure motives, you're looking for work.
It's a paid sales call, isn't it?
Yeah. And so, you know, maintenance, our maintenance agreement was we'd be there 3 hours on a tune-up. But we were doing, pulled coil. Pull a blower, clean the coil, get our measurements, make sure that it's performing properly before we leave, clean up, not leave fingerprints on the wall at the thermostat,
right?
All of that stuff, but it takes time to do all that. Not kill the grass outside with the coil cleaner, all of that stuff takes time. So you got to charge. You've got to charge for that time. Unfortunately, that's the only way you can stay in business and take care of more people. So trying to be the cheapest is just not smart for your family.
Right. Race to the bottom.
And it doesn't take care of the customer either. So, I know that people, I was trying to help a guy not far from here a few years ago, and he just, he said, my customers won't pay that. And I said, but I had a business right down the street from you, and they were paying it for me. I'm not sure why they won't pay it for you, except maybe you need to care a little more. I don't know.
Doesn't that go back to what Henry Ford used to say? Whether you think you can or you can't, you're right.
You can.
Was what I know we've found, and so many others have found the same thing, that if you don't take what we do, our industry is very technical. And if you don't break that down into a very simple level that people can understand, they'll go with what they do understand. And that's the lowest price. Mm-hmm. So as you said, Jim, you were building an experience for your customers. Your technicians knew what to do. That was one of the things I always found so valuable about how you ran your business, was that there were very clear expectations for what each technician was supposed to do on a call. They didn't go in and go, okay, what am I supposed to do on this call? You had that structured and set up to where they knew exactly what they were going to do, how they were going to handle it, what was expected, and what those expectations were to deliver to that customer.
Well, and NCI taught me this. We sit down with our guys and we say, okay, what's a perfect system look like? If you could put in at your mom's house the perfect system, what features would it have? How would it perform? How does it look outside? And we took that and we applied it to service. So you go into a customer's home and it doesn't have a drain pan that's 2 inches. We're going to offer it. I mean, it doesn't have a float switch that shuts the unit down. We're going to offer that. So we measured against a perfect system everybody else's system that's out there. And so not only do we, have more opportunities from that because we're improving performance of the equipment and existing equipment, But customers then realize, you know, I got a cheaper price, but that's why I got a cheaper price, because they left out those items that were important to me. They didn't even tell me I had a high static pressure on my blower. They didn't know, you know? And so when we go into a system, we're trying to improve the performance, not just fix, you know, capacitors going to go bad. But if that's the only thing you want to change while you're there and get out in a hurry so you can get to the next capacitor to change, you're not doing justice for your homeowner. You're not taking care of people.
Yeah.
You're making money. And that money is not covering what it costs you to be there. It's just not. And you've got to have a tech that can bill in a year over $250,000 to even have him, for there to be anything left for the company to use to pay overhead.
Right.
So you've got to, unfortunately, taking care of people is, it costs. And people know that. I mean, you know, I always was in awe of plumbers and electricians. They always had the nicest houses, right? So, you know, I think a plumber charges more because he knows nobody else wants to do the work he's doing.
Yeah.
But if you take care of people and they see the value of what you're doing and you show that value on every visit, in a maintenance, you know, we talked about maintenance a minute ago, but we did the same. I did the same cleaning every 6 months. I didn't do a heat cleaning and a summer cleaning, you know, so the customer knew exactly what to expect. If I had a new guy, routinely I'd get a call from the homeowner and say, "Hey, he didn't do such and such while he was here."
They knew what to expect.
Yeah. So, I mean, they knew what to expect. It was safe. I was a good option for them. They didn't have to worry about their who met us at the door. Because, you know, we made sure we had quality people, ethical people.
Right.
So, and, you know, all of those details matter.
Right. And I think it's so easy being in the business, you forget to put yourself in the role of the customer and look at what they would like to experience. Just, you know, I know our friend, mutual friend, David Holt always said, look through the eyes of the customer, look through their lenses. And that is such a valuable exercise. If you put yourself in a situation where you've received such poor customer service, and like you said, you don't have to look very far, but how would you want to be treated? And I think we forget that so frequently, to put ourselves in the role of the customer and then do the exact thing that we would want done to us.
Yeah.
So, and I don't think when you're dealing with the safety and comfort and health of a home, that you're not looking for, all right, I want to be the cheapest. You're looking for, I want to make sure that this works. And that there's confidence that that's going to be taken care of.
Well, and that's, you know, what ties in with that is training. You've got to have I was on I do commissioning now. I'm a mechanical, work for engineering firm. I go out and do commissioning. I was on a project day before yesterday where the guy said to me, "I've been doing this 37 years. I know how it's supposed to be done." And I said, you know, I've been doing it that long too. And you can't run flex duct in 180 degrees and it flow air. I mean, you just can't, not the air it would flow if it was pulled straight. And, you know, I know that, but so I only know that because I've had training and I didn't get that at Mississippi State. I'm sorry. I had that training. That training came from NCI and folks like you, manufacturing training, those kind of things that taught, how to pay attention to those details. And we say, well, you know, it don't matter that flex duct's kinked, it's still going to flow there. Yeah, it'll flow there, but it's noisy. It's going to actually put more amp draw on your motor, because your motor's got to work harder, and you know the motor will fail quicker, or you'll just pay more every year, every month in power bill. So I think training is integral to that, and you know, we did training, in-house training, an hour and a half every every Wednesday morning. But you've also got to stretch yourself and get out away from local, because, you know, believe it or not, every area has their own kind of errors or things that they've been taught by a prominent individual in that area that is not right. And so you need to train, you need to get out beyond just yourself, and manufacturers train you how to take care of their equipment. They don't train you how to take care of customers, you know?
Oh, great point.
So, you know, they want to get through the warranty period. you want a customer for life, and you want to make sure when you sit down next to them at church that they see that you had the proper motives and you don't have anything to be ashamed of when you sit down next to them. It's important to make sure your guys have as much training as you can offer, and there's never too much, you know?
Yeah. And then putting it into use, that's the other thing is, you know, how do you implement this? I know that's one of the biggest challenges of anyone that goes through a training class is, how do I do this? Where do I start? And because usually when you leave a training class, it's like, I want to do all this stuff. I want to implement all these things. And they end up getting paralyzed because you don't start with the very smallest thing and think, how can we do this, master it, and then move to the next, you know, slowly progressing.
Yeah. So, you know, I had a guy, we put on some NCI training at my place, about 15 years ago, 10 years ago, maybe. And, a friend of mine sent, three of his techs from Georgia to come to the class. Mm-hmm. There was one of those guys routinely nodding off and that kind of thing during class. And then on the final day, he was supposed to take a test and get a certificate. He was so drunk, he couldn't even come in for the test. When you send a guy for training, you need to contract with him. Hey, bud, I'm sending you, I'm going to spend this amount of money to send you over and get training. When you come back, you're going to train us. We want to see what you learned. And I want to get positive results from any testing or certifications.
Expectations.
You got to set that expectation. And my wife will tell you, I was terrible at this. I worried about guys' families more than they worried about their family, you know? Mm-hmm. But you got to hold people accountable. So if you create a contract with him and say, okay, when you get back, here's what you're going to do for us. And oh, by the way, you need to stay with me, you know, a year, mm-hmm. I don't say payback, but as a result of that training, I'm sending you this training. You need to invest in the training and then invest in the company.
Right.
But that was something, I'll be honest with you, David Holt taught me that. And once we started that, it really helped. And I never went back on a guy and said, hey, I need some money back after he came back and didn't pass or anything. But it was the expectation set, and they knew that the training was important, not just a week away from home, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, it wasn't a paid vacation. And
yeah. By the way, the kid that was in the class that didn't, he didn't have a job when he got home. The owner and I had gotten to be pretty good friends after
that.
And it was a shame, but you send a guy to a class without any expectations, you get what you get, you know.
Right. So I know, talking back on expectations, I know you were a big fan of taking the risk off your customer's shoulders when it came to pricing, and you were a big fan of flat rate. Do you care to comment on that any?
Yeah, you know, I think some people have the idea that time material is really the best way for the customer, because if it takes me less time, it doesn't cost them as much. If it takes me more time. I don't have any, you know, I don't have any loss in that. So,
right.
So it really is what's best. But for me, and for Dad, you know, we wanted to take the, you know, you go to a call, service call, and you got a guy standing over you because he's worried about how much time you're going to take.
You know,
or you send a young tech, a young and experience-wise tech, not necessarily age, to a home, and it takes them twice as long to change that blower motor as it does an experienced tech. Have you really done what's best for your customer when you charge in time material? Now, flat rate, what we would do is when we answered the phone, said, "Miss Jones, you know, we'll be at your home between 10 and 12 today. And our diagnostic is $65, $85, $120 was what it was for us. And our tech's going to evaluate the system. And at the end of that, he'll give you a price for any repairs." So in other words, you're going to owe us $120. And we didn't say it this way, but you're going to owe us $120 if he, you know, that's the most you're at risk mm-hmm. when you call us. Now, if you decide to go ahead and do the work, he'll get your approval before he does that. And that way you're not standing over and worried about how much more is this going to cost. And when you get into major repairs, that's important because the customer, a lot of times customer don't have that money sitting in the bank.
Right.
You know, they're
right.
going to put it on a credit card or something. They need to know exactly how much it is before you get started. And the customer can then trust that you're going to do what you said you were going to do.
Right.
So for me, flat rate was just, it made things easier for my techs because they had a price they could give right straight to the homeowner. And if there was any problems with the pricing, the homeowner just called me, you know.
Right.
You know, that way it takes my tech out of that conversation. Well, I've got a book. This is what the price is. You know, right. they're not figuring a price up and sitting, you know, with their head down on the kitchen table trying to put a price together for the homeowner. You know, they get treated the same way everybody else does, same book. You know,
and you're really changing the role of a technician when you do that. Instead of just, you know, instead of them now being pushed to close a sale or anything or find all kinds of stuff wrong with it, it's just they're really becoming an advisor and putting that customer in control so they make the choice based right. off of what your book shows.
Right, right. And, you know, customer, I go to McDonald's, double quarter pounder, fries, Coke, number 4. That's what I order. Right. So people like that consolidation of items. They like to buy the burger meal instead of the burger, the fries and the Coke. Right.
Yeah.
So when you're putting your pricing together, you may have a, let's say it's a capacitor and capacitor's bad. But chances are the other capacitor, if there's one on the indoor unit, is aged as well. The contactor might look a little suspicious.
Right.
So you may put together a bundle and say, "Hey, homeowner, here's a bundle price that discounts all of it, and you won't be calling me back in 3 months for another capacitor or the contactor finally going right. out." So, you know, there's an opportunity for you to really help the customer. If you remember, part of the problem with service is customers got to be there for you. You know, they are taking time out of their day. Mm-hmm. If you go ahead and offer them an additional repair while you're there, chances are they're going to take it because they don't want the interruption again, you right. know, another month from now. So, you know, and I started to, in my flat rate pricing, I also put together, you know, a electrical overhaul, or however you word it, mm-hmm. or those groups of repairs that could be all be done at one time and save the customer time in the end. You know, manufacturers give a 10-year warranty, but they put parts in there that ain't going to last 10 years.
Yeah.
So yeah. You may as well go ahead and try to help the homeowner not have to suffer through another service call. You know, even if it's a year away, if they save a second diagnostic, that's already a savings.
You know?
But you could group that together and price it, because you've already got the power off. You've already got the unit pulled apart. Why not go ahead and do it all at one time?
Yep. And two, what I hear is you're reducing the amount of decision fatigue that a technician has to make instead of trying to predict what's going to happen, what could happen to offer a solution. You're already prepackaging it like the combo meal, mm-hmm. and they just present the option and that takes care of it. And I know that decision fatigue is real. You mentioned the heat earlier on a previous podcast episode. Adam Muffich and I talked about when we were doing some field testing on Comfort Max, and we had been in a back and forth up out of a 130 degree attic in East Tennessee, and neither one of us could think. I mean, our brains were just mush because of the heat. And I mean, that's real. And it just compounds that decision-making. We're like, we can't even think straight.
Yeah.
So not having to think and just making it automatic, I see that being a huge benefit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, we kind of, that kind of brings up another point for me is when you schedule a tech for 10 calls a day, you're abusing your technician.
Agreed.
And so, somehow you've got to find a way for your tech to be, taken care of, hydrated, you know, this kind of year. And it's always hot.
Yep.
You know, in summer here. So you've got to take care of them. But the other thing that we would try to do is make sure for maintenance for horizontal units in the attic, we did those first thing in the morning in the summer. So, yep. You know, there was we would just tell the customer, look, he doesn't need to be in the attic at 4 p.m. on a day when it's 95 outside.
Yep.
So that expectation when they bought the maintenance agreement from us, they knew that we're going to try to schedule you as first call or catch you on a cooler day or rainy day to do your cleaning. And then the other thing about it is make sure your tech tells the homeowner, hey, I'm going to be in your attic. You check on me about every 5 minutes, 10 minutes, holler at me if you don't hear me. You know,
great idea.
I had a tech one time called. We could tell he was, and it was after hours, and my service manager could tell he couldn't understand what he was saying, but, you know, just really, and he was in need. We had mm-hmm. no idea where he was. You know, it was after hours service call. And finally, the homeowner called me. They actually had my cell number, and the tech had been stung by a wasp and had gone out and got in the truck, cranked the truck up, and he was severely allergic. And he was sitting in the truck with it running, and she realized, I haven't seen him in 20 minutes. Where is he? And she went out and found him. I mean, he could almost, you know, had gone into shock from that wasp. So you got to somehow make sure your techs have an out. And you know, I would always tell them, hey, tell the customer, you know, check on me. If I'm going in a hot attic and I'm by myself, I need you to holler at me if you don't hear me. And I'll try not to stay up there over 10 minutes at a time and those kind of things. So if you don't have the tech and out, I mean, 911 is an out. Yeah.
Yeah.
But most, you know, that tech couldn't even think to dial 911. How was he going to tell him where he was?
Right. I mean, right. You know,
so it's important to to make sure that you're taking care of those around you, those that you love. I see air conditioning companies that run techs and run techs and run techs in the ground. And that's, you know, probably partly why we have trouble finding folks.
Yeah.
It's because we don't really take care of them. So,
yeah. And that goes back to that care principle you talked about. Burnout in our industry is very real. Hmm. And it's something that I'm afraid if we don't address sooner than later, it is going to cause us very long-term damage in our industry because people are viewed as expendable in products instead of, like you said, your dad had mentioned, you know, put yourself in that role of that customer and what they're going through. And it's easy to forget that if you're sitting in an air-conditioned office versus, you know, on a roof where the sun's blazing down on you.
Yeah, I've had my share of time on a roof this year. It's been hot, I won't tell you.
Yeah.
I've got a customer that's the roof is 53 acres, 175 units on the roof, and we've been commissioning those units. I don't know how my techs did it. I you know, and I'm right. I'm 56. I couldn't do it today, and I had I had installers and techs that were my age. I don't know how they do it. You know, so we owe it to them and our homeowner, but we owe it to our tech to take care of them, make sure they're all right. Yeah. You know, if they have any type of issue, to try to work around those issues for them, make sure that they're hydrated. You know, hey, as an owner, you know, my dad routinely would show up on a job with drinks. Hey, here's some water. Here's a Coke. You know,
right.
Take a break with me. Let's talk a minute. Those kind of things to try to take care of your technicians.
It's I think there's a loud principle that I'm hearing there. As we wrap this up, Jim, if somebody was wanting to start improving their service department, what are some things that you would recommend for them to, number one, look at their existing department, and then number two, maybe small changes to make? Where would someone start if they're really wanting to improve their service department?
Well, I think you've got to ask yourself, what do my customers deserve? Yeah. And then try to create a service experience that honors what the customer deserves. And that may even mean, hey, calling some of your customers and ask them how things are, and kind of put together a plan that takes care of the customers. You know, for us, it meant we scheduled in 2-hour time frame. We would tell the homeowner we'll be there between 8 and 10, and if I was going to be late, my office better have called that homeowner, you know, ahead of time, not right at 10 o'clock, but call them at 8:15 when they know they're not going to make it until noon. You know, those kind of right things. You got to be forward reaching in that kind of stuff and take the time to do that. Now, tech wise, if I'm sitting back and I want to, really start paying attention to service, I've got to start measuring. You know, you need to know what your average billing rate is. You need to know how many billable hours a day a guy bills out.
Right.
And then you need to be measuring his callbacks. You need to watch how long he takes on calls, how long it takes to between calls, all of those measurements that you need to do. And then you just put them out in front of everybody and say, hey guys, this is what's going on. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Can you help us be better? And, you know, what is it that old fable about the smart guy in England that was, trying to, guess the weight, dressed weight of the bull. And, he made a guess and, you know, it's over period of time, several people made guesses, and he took the average of the guesses, compared them to his guess, And the average was closer to the actual weight than his guess was. So the group of people's knowledge is much better than you saying, we're going to do it this way, right? You got to have, and you got to get that buy-in from your guys too. They need to feel like part of the system. They really need to be part of the system, but they, you know, they need to feel like I have control of how my day goes. I have control of taking care of customers. You know I can do this because that's what the business wants. That's what Jim wants to happen.
Right.
To take care of the customer. So those, you know, I'd say put a scoreboard up. That was the first thing John Garofalo had me do. And we put a scoreboard up and immediately saw change from my techs. Once we started scoring, especially callbacks, they loved it. They love to rag on each other and say, hey, man, you know, I could have fixed that if I had gone over there.
Right.
And gives them time to kind of joke around with each other, but also helps them see, maybe I'm weak here. Maybe I need some training in this. Hey, Jim, can I go to training on how to charge a system right? Or, and, you know, my answer would be, hey, you're going to teach us a class. Won't you go, you know, dig into some stuff and see if you can't figure it out on your own and teach a class in front of some guys that know how to do it.
Right.
And you know, you learn pretty quick that way, but some of those things you got to get out of town. You got to get some training from somebody else. You know, I would have never known about static pressure had I not been to an NCI class.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to stretch yourself and get out of your bounds some. But I would, you know, if I were a owner today and I had not really paid attention to service, I would start with a scoreboard.
It's and what's cool, I appreciate you so much. It's been so good catching up with you. I so much appreciate the knowledge that you're willing to share. I mentioned at the beginning that, you know, one of the foundations for this episode, us chatting together, was the article that you did in Today's AC. So I would recommend to anyone listening to this, Jim writes a monthly article for Today's AC on a lot of these business topics. If you're interested, I would encourage you to go to Today's AC site and catch Jim's articles every month. This one's actually the one that we're talking about. It's going to be a two-parter. So Jim, any final words before we call it a day?
You know, the only thing I don't like about the article is I don't get to hear from anybody on that reads it. You know, if you got a question or you want to talk, at the bottom of the article is a phone number. Give me a call, call NCI. They'll get you in touch with me or talk with NCI about it. I love, sharing with folks, and I love the opportunity to help, anybody who needs some help and wants and is open enough to say, hey, I need some help here. For me, I got to tell y'all, I'm probably the most blessed person you'll ever meet. I had a family, parents who just really made my life almost perfect. So you guys have to understand that they taught me how to share and how to give, and I want that opportunity to share and give to those around me as well.
You do an incredible job at it, my friend. I thank you for being with us. And for those of you that are tuning in, thank you for tuning in to the High Performance HVAC Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And just like we talk about measuring and not guessing, if you liked what you saw, let us know. Let us know what you liked, what you didn't like. And if you don't want to miss any other future episodes, be sure and hit subscribe. Appreciate you all tuning in. We'll see you on another episode.
Thank y'all much.